Let's go back in time to 1932 as Converse brings you historic footage of the legendary original Celtics with whom all great professional teams are compared.
We have now taken over your radio.
Richie Guerin is about to show you the most important step in getting past a man. It's the first one.
And Oscar will inbound it. The men in green, the Milwaukee Bucks, that's Al Cinder against Bellamy.
Has Jordan. Allen shakes free. Gets two!
Gilmore on a big step!
Oh,
brother! Lead Toledo artist. You get 21.
4:28 to go in the first quarter for the Cal Palace. Here's Barry.
Jordan. Open. Chicago with the lead!
Hello? Oh, and welcome back to a post-Christmas edition of the Over and Back Classic NBA podcast at HarvardProfessorism.com. I am Jason Mann, and with me is my partner, Rich Kreitch. Rich, great to be back with you.
Yes, hi. I assume your holidays were fantastic.
Oh, they were wonderful. I got every blessing that I possibly have ever imagined getting, so... So, you know, unlike these teams that we're going to talk about, I was unwilling to settle for second best.
I don't know if these teams settled for second best, but well, you know, they kind of had to be, unfortunately.
Well, ended up with second best. Yeah. I mean, You know, some of us are winners in life. Some of us are champions, and some of us, you know, we're willing to take second place.
Yeah. And I define life by the amount of rings one wins or acquires. And
there you go. Yes.
And what these teams do. One of these teams won some, but the others, where are you guys? What are you doing?
Yeah. They're not winning any rings, you know.
Not elites in my mind.
Yeah.
All these guys.
Right. None of these people are elite at all. So, all right. We all know that the Chicago Bulls were the top 10 team of the 1990s. Top team, the number one team of the 1990s. Six championships in 8 years, greatest single season of all time, best player of his generation, if not all time, so on and so forth. So you know, that debate is settled. But I don't think it's really clear who the second best team in the decade is. You know, I mean, I think that's sort of worth examining in more detail because I think there's one strong contender that everyone would point to as the number two team. But if you look at like the entire resume, if you look at the whole season or the whole decade rather, the you know multiple great seasons, multiple you know players with elite seasons, that kind of thing, I you know my thought, it's not that clear.
Yeah, no, I'm right with you. Yeah, you know, there's a name that'll pop up that a lot of people probably immediately assume because you know of titles and then you know some that they won, you know, when the Bulls were gone. Hint. But if you really look at the overall resumes of some teams, and when you talk about the number two team in the 90s, I think you have to go a little bit beyond simply you know who won titles when the Bulls were gone or who won titles when the Bulls had left or whatever. I think it's worth going in a little bit deeper and looking at you know individual players, as you said, and also you know. Count the whole decade. You know, maybe it's not a team that made it to the finals every single year. Maybe it's a team that, you know, made it pretty far every single year. Maybe it's a team that made a bunch of NBA finals but didn't quite get over the hump. But yeah, it's pretty interesting because I think immediately, you know, people will come up with one team. But yeah, like you said, I don't think it's very clear. And in doing research for this, I think I've kind of changed my answer of who I would have, you know, immediately said. So maybe we'll explore that here in a little bit.
There you go. So, So we looked at SRS ratings, which is we've talked about before, take into account point differential and strength of schedule. Also, we talked about with seasons with a winning percentage above 600 and finals and conference finals appearances. Also considering elite individual seasons, which we use a baseline of above 11 win shares and win shares per 48 above 1.8. So that's kind of the, you know, just kind of where we went with math. I mean, obviously we're, you know, using some common sense here and going beyond that, but that's sort of the, you know, basic baseline of what we kind of set to sort of let, you know, that's sort of the starting point, I guess you could say. So,
yeah, absolutely.
So first we picked the Utah Jazz. They had six seasons of an SRS above five, which is, how would you describe like that? That's like a deep playoff team usually.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that's
not necessarily not necessarily going to be championship, you know, finals contender for sure. It depends.
Western Conference Finals or Conference Finals. Pretty much a very good chance of that team is going to make the Conference Finals, which is no slouch. Like, I think, you know, we sort of define a lot of stuff by NBA Finals, but I think consistently making your Conference Finals is an important thing to do. I think it's important. It does tell a lot. You know, you can't get over that hump of whoever, but that's a big deal. I mean, you've proven A, that you're good in the regular season, and you've also beaten a lot of teams, you know, on the way there, especially in the 90s. You've gone through a few rounds to get there, and that's impressive.
Absolutely, yes. And so they had 9 seasons above 600 winning percentage. Only one season where they had under 50 wins, not including the 99 lockout season, obviously, because there were 50 games that year. No one went undefeated that year. they won 47 games in 93. They had 2 finals appearances, losing both times in 97-98. They had 3 additional conference finals appearances, which I had sort of forgotten about, like they made finals, you know, 92, 94, and 96, like the even years.
92, they could have spoiled. They actually took Portland to 6 games in that Western Conference Finals, and that's kind of funny. They could have spoiled the famous Jazz Bulls matchups that we had in the late 90s. It could have been an early Jazz Bulls, you know, the finals, which actually would have been pretty fascinating because I think they're, you know, dramatically different teams, of course. So that would have been fun to see.
Yeah, that would have been that obviously is.
Mostly because the Jazz wouldn't have horrible uniforms when they were in the finals.
That's true. Yeah,
we could actually appreciate them more and not scoff at the very look of them in the finals with those hideous uniforms. But
yes, that
plug for a recent podcast. Yeah. Insert here.
That would have been an interesting that would have been a very interesting uniform-wise podcast. So, and then they had, I counted 16 elite player seasons, 9 for Karl Malone, 7 for John Stockton. They played at the level of a championship contender for basically the whole decade. Only they had 6 seasons of a 5+ SRS and only dipping below 3 once. They and really, you know, they only lost to worse opponents, on 2 occasions. So they played pretty well in the playoffs, you know, once they got there either. I mean, they beat the teams they should have beaten. They had a couple of upsets. You know, I mean, they didn't underachieve in the playoffs, unlike some of the franchises that we know and love.
Yeah, I mean, if you really look at it in terms of the teams that they, you know, going through their playoff history and looking at, you know, the losses, of course, you know, seasons they didn't make the finals or didn't win the championship, of course, you know, all the seasons. But if you look at it, there wasn't like a, oh my God, the Jazz should have easily won this. How did they not? Or whatever. You look at every single year. I mentioned the 91-92. They took Portland to 6 games in the Western Conference Finals. That was a great Portland team, so I'm not really going to put that against them. 95-96, they took Seattle to 7 games in the Western Conference Finals before eventually falling. That Sonics team, I mean, that might be one, but that was a really, really good Sonics team. Of course, then would make it to the finals, and then were good challengers to the Bulls in the NBA Finals. So that's certainly one that I wouldn't discredit. But I thought that 95-96 was interesting too, because they took Seattle to 7 games in the Western Conference Finals, almost made it to the NBA Finals, and then would, of course, make 2 straight NBA Finals after that. So you look at the record of just a team that every single year is in the picture. I mean, there's a 3-year period where they're pretty much either gonna win the final or you know, get to the NBA Finals, or they're right there in it. And that's I think that's important. I mean, yeah, they never won that title, they never got those rings, but man, those are a lot of really good seasons. Like you said, the seasons above 600% winning percentage, 9 of them. Like that was a great, great both regular season and playoff team, you know, every single year, which is important, I think.
Yeah. Who do you think was probably like the third most important player in those Jazz years? I mean, obviously Malone and Stockton are 1 and 2.
Hornacek, maybe.
Yeah, I mean he was there for. I mean,
he was those late years. Yeah, the early ones. Like, I don't know, like Tyrone Corbin, or like, you know what I mean? Like it's.
Yeah.
Who did they have on those? Because.
Yeah, Hornacek got there in 94. So I mean,
because he was a Sixer prior, because he was on the Suns and then he went to the Sixers, correct?
Right, yeah, he spent a year and a half.
Was that the
a year and a half with the Sixers and then was traded to the Jazz in 94 and then spent.
Was it like Benoit Benjamin or like the rest? Like, you know what I mean?
There.
Like,
yeah, it's interesting how there aren't like a whole lot of guys, at least that I can think of, that spent like most.
I know Jeff Malone was there a lot of years.
Yeah, but that was more
confusing me in video games forever.
I feel like that was more in the 80s. I mean, Antoine Carr was there for about 4 years.
Yeah.
David
Benoit. I didn't mean Benoit Benjamin. I meant David Benoit.
Yeah, right. Who I don't remember very well. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting how, you know, but I guess that's. It just goes to show you, you know, you have Stockton and Malone and you can build a great team around that. You know, you didn't really necessarily have the continuity. I mean, I guess the Bulls did overhaul their team quite a bit from the first.
Yeah, but those 3 years were fairly consistent in terms of, I mean, and you didn't really need much other than role player. But yeah, the starting five was pretty much locked in stone each one of those 3 years,
yeah,
with a roving cast of like nobody, yeah, you know, bench guys or whatever, yeah, which was fine. They didn't,
yeah, Byron Russell was there from 94 through 2002, okay, so he was there for quite a bit of it. But
I mean, you can make a legit case for like five guys, and I think that's what tells the whole tale there is, like, you know, you could say Tyrone Corbin, and I don't think I would be, you know, I'd be like, oh, you know, that you could, but yeah, it's yeah. I know Tom Chambers was there for a few years too, wasn't he? Like really, like mid 30s Tom Chambers, and it wasn't very good.
Was he there?
I seem to remember most of my memories of 90s basketball comes from video games, so
Mark Eaton was there through 93.
Oh yeah, here's Mr. Tom Chambers, 93, 94, 94, 95.
Okay, so there you go.
I remember him in like NBA Live 95.
Okay, I sort of vaguely remember that now. Okay, yeah, he missed a year and then he went to played in Israel for a year.
Yeah,
I did not realize that. There you go. Yeah, that's right. Okay, well, there you go. So, yeah, I mean, it's kind of interesting that they maintained this consistent excellence for basically the entire decade, despite having such a, you know, other than Sacha Malone, they didn't have a whole lot of guys who were there for that entire run, or even for, like, you know, most of that. I mean, yeah, I think six seasons is the most that anybody else was there for kind of the entire run. And like anybody was there for like 8 years, you know. So, so interesting stuff. So next, we went with the Seattle Supersonics, and this is a team that was maybe even more impressive in the regular season compared to the Jazz or anybody else in this list, but they had some playoff disappointments.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think, you know, we talked about the Jazz, and in terms of you looking through their playoff record and going, oh man, they, you know, there weren't many teams that you thought the Jazz should have beaten, didn't beat. Well, you look at the Supersonics, and I think the mid 90s has a lot of those, you know, of course, the most glaring example, the 94 Nuggets, you know, Seattle's the one seed, the Nuggets are the eight seed. They dropped that playoff series. And that's a great Sonics team at that point, too. I mean, of course, in 2 years, they would, you know, make it to the NBA Finals. But then the year after that, 94, a lot of people don't talk about this one. The 95 Lakers beat them. And that's, you know, not a great Lakers team if you really look at it. Like, there's really no, you know, the Supersonics should have handled them pretty easily and didn't. So, I think that's an important one to sort of bring up as well, other than the 94 Nuggets. And then they also dropped a series to the 98 Lakers. But at that point, the Lakers were starting to kind of get things together and, of course, would have the makings of the team that would then go on to win the three-peat, you know, a little bit later. So that one I wouldn't really put on. But you look at those 94 Nuggets and those 95 Lakers, you look at, you know, what could have happened. And, of course, that 94 Nuggets team, especially because that bounces them from the first round as a number one seed. So that's really it. But, I mean, otherwise, regular season, great. But, yeah, playoff, there was a ton of disappointment. When they eventually made the NBA Finals against the Bulls in 96, they had a pretty good run. And they were actually, you know, gave that team a little bit of a run for its money. But as we saw, that was kind of fleeting, and they wouldn't really get to that elite level again, you know, the rest of the decade or really ever.
Yeah, again. I mean, they went down 3-0 in that series, but then they made it tough, got to 3-2, and then and came close to winning Game 3 or Game 6, if I recall, or were at least threatened for a while. But obviously that didn't work out so well for them.
Yeah, I was speaking of that 94-95 Lakers team. I know I was doing a little bit of look at it. I mean, that is, in my mind, it's like a fun team, and I enjoy this team. But like the Sonics should have beat, like, the Cedric Sabalas was your leading scorer. Nick Van Exel was your second leading scorer, and Vlade Divac was your third leading scorer. I mean, you know, Seattle, you probably should have beat.
Yeah,
them.
That's
Sam Bowie off the bench, though. I mean, that's gonna be tough. So
yeah, well, you know, you don't want to mess with Sam Bowie.
Kurt Rambis was there as well. So
nice. You know, I feel like the Lakers did that, like, with almost every one of, like, their classic 80s players. Like, they brought them back for, like, a season. Like Byron Scott, they brought back for Kobe's
season. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, Magic came back for, like, a cameo after the retirement, or even more than a cameo, but, like, for 30 games. He has a coach for a very brief spell, which didn't work out. Like, I feel like like almost all those guys did something else for the Lakers in some sort of capacity. I mean, I'm sure other franchises have done that as well. I guess the Lakers, you know, being better known, those players being better known because of how many finals they made and all that good stuff. But that just strikes me as interesting. Kurt Rambis, of all people, being brought back. But yes, the Sonics had six seasons above a 6 SRS, which is really good. Six seasons also above 600 winning percentage, six straight 55 win seasons, or 55 or more win seasons, one finals appearance, an additional conference finals appearance in 93, and then, and this is actually surprisingly low, only six elite player seasons, three for Gary Payton, two for Sean Kemp, and one for Detlef Schrempf. And again, kind of, you know, based on the criteria that I made, which, you know, maybe you can argue with that criteria, but we had to set something. So that was kind of what we did.
Exactly. So,
yeah, but but still, yeah, I mean, again, if it weren't for the playoff failures, they might be my favorite in this, but you just can't really, you can't really ignore that.
Yeah, I mean, they're glaring. I mean, it really hurts their legacy, or at least how I thought of them, because they're one that I thought was going to be higher up on my list, and when it was all said and done, I'm doing a little bit of the research and looking, oh, man, this team is really, you know, great regular season, but just could not get it done. And it's not like they, I'm not going to hold them against, you know, if they made the Western Conference Finals a bunch and then lost, or made it to the Finals a bunch and lost, but like the first round exits, you know, losing to that Lakers team, those are ones that are just so glaring when you look at it. And it's like, man, you got to win those. You know what I mean? Like that those are obviously lesser teams that beat you in the playoffs, and that hurts always.
Yeah, the 98 one, I mean, the Lakers were,
yeah, I'm not gonna count that. I put as like a kind of a question mark. That was a budgeting Lakers team that they wasn't, all the parts weren't there yet, but it was ready to go.
Those teams had the same record, 61 wins each, and you know, I mean, you, they had the Sonics did not have much of a, you know, Vin Baker was unable to stop Shaq, surprisingly enough. So
shocking.
Yeah. Yes. So
Prime Shaq was no match, or Vin Baker was no match for Prime Shaq.
Right. Exactly. So, so next is the, San Antonio Spurs, who, had four seasons above, a 5 SRS, and then five seasons between 2 and 4, which is more just like pretty good, like middling second round playoff team type level.
Yeah.
So, but you know, a team that was a contender to go reasonably deep in the playoffs every season of the 90s, which I think they may have been the only team that we kind of looked at here who were like every, well, I guess the only season they did have one season where they dropped off because of the, David Robinson injury, and that was the,
exactly.
they got Tim Duncan. So never mind.
So it worked out.
Yeah, that worked out fine for them. But I'm not sure there was a team. I guess the Jazz would have been the only team that would like was
they never had
good
a drop
or great
off,
every yeah. year. Yeah, every right. other yeah, team yeah. had probably had like a season or two where they dropped off. But
yeah, but it's fascinating. I mean, you look at the Spurs, and that's one of the things I think we've, at least one of our goals with the podcast in terms of stuff that we've done recently, is bringing awareness to the fact that the Spurs were a goddamn good team before Tim Duncan got there. I mean, like, I'm not like, I don't think anybody claims that they were a bad team or whatever, but people kind of assume Duncan got there, then Popovich comes, and then everything's ready to go. But it's like, you know, under Bob Hill with David Robinson, that was a really good Western Conference team. And of course the Western Conference, you know, wasn't what it is today, but that, I mean, consistently, it's a really, really good team. And yeah, like you look at 55 plus win seasons, that, you know, throughout the decade, just you know, eight seasons above 600 win percentage. It's a really good team. I mean, it's a consistently great team. Like you said, the SRS kind of puts them in sort of like a second round team. But, you know, with that said, I mean, they're just a really good, well-rounded team, I think, at this point, and really have a lot of depth in terms of just doing it a lot of times throughout the decade.
Yeah, and they had one finals appearance. They won in 99. They had another a conference finals appearance in 95. That's sort of an infamous series where Houston smashed the Spurs and Hakeem sort of embarrassed David Robinson, although we've sort of said that's a little bit overstated. But nevertheless, he clearly won that matchup handily. And they had nine elite player seasons, eight for David Robinson, one for Tim Duncan. Of course, he debuted in 98, and then 99 probably would not have counted because basically nobody played enough games for the win shares totals to fit there, and there was no way of doing it a search that would have fit that as well, so we didn't count that. But you can probably count on that season being pretty strong.
I'm sure it was. Yes.
So And you looked into how many times they lost to worse opponents, and that's kind of a surprising answer to me, given their reputation at the time.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, if we can kind of go through these right now, and I guess I'll give you a little bit of an idea. Because, yeah, I was kind of surprised. I don't know if I saw a team where I said, yeah, the Spurs should have beat that team, you know, in the playoffs or whatever. And there's obviously teams they lost to that were better than them. But I don't know if I found one that I really thought was, you know, a surprise. You know, 89-90, the Spurs lost to the Portland Trail Blazers. You know,
that was a Trailblazers team that, of course, they made the finals that year. They made the finals that year. So,
yeah, exactly. Against the Pistons. And then 1991, the Spurs lost to the Golden State Warriors in the first round. I mean, that's maybe the only one I would bring up, but that was a really good Warriors team at that time.
Yeah, that was Run TMC. That was Mullen Hardaway and Mitch Richmond. The Spurs had a much better record because the Warriors had 44 wins and the Spurs had in the 50-ish wins range. So that's
maybe one that I put a question mark next to. But as far as my like personal bias, I would kind of be like, yeah, I know, I think the Warriors team, but that could just maybe
me 55 games. So that Larry Brown versus Don Nelson. That's sort of, that would be an interesting series to look at. More in detail, but that one I would say, but you know, it's not necessarily like a.
It's not a slam dunk on that, in that respect. Right. 91-92, they lost to the Suns. This is prior to Barkley going to the Suns, I believe. So that might be
the Suns were the higher seed and they had 53 wins. So, you know, you wouldn't necessarily say, I would not count that one.
Yeah. And then, of course, the next year they lost to the Suns yet again. And that was, you know, of course, the Barkley.
Even better team. So yes, that's a I would definitely say that was not one of the teams that you would pick for sure. So
yeah, 93-94, they won 55 games. They lost to the Jazz in the first round. That is probably the one that I picked that I would probably put an asterisk next to. That they probably should have beat that team, but you know, Jazz are a good team. 94-95, they lost to the Rockets, of course, which you know they went on to win the title for the Rockets. So I'll let that one. 95-96, they lost to the Jazz again. You know, you can make a case. I mean, this Spurs team won 59 games, so they probably should have beat the Jazz, but you know, socked them alone. That's tough. Tough one to keep. 96-97, of course, they missed the playoffs that year, so that one does not count. 97-98, they lose to the Jazz yet again. The Jazz will go to the finals, so, you know, that's, again, not one. And then 98-99, they won the NBA Finals.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, you don't go through too many. And then 90 to 2000, if we count those, that's probably the big one that I would bring up. 53-win team. They lost to the Suns in the first round. That probably should not have happened.
I think Duncan was hurt for that one, though.
If I remember correctly, he was hurt. Yes. So maybe that was the case. But
so, yeah,
that's about it. But yeah, no, it's a pretty clean record if you look at it.
Yeah, I like it. Good job. Good job, San Antonio. Way to be successful in the 90s.
Right.
Next, we have the Houston Rockets, who I would say would probably be the favorite, would have been my favorite before I looked into it deeply. And I still certainly respect their accomplishments. And if anyone wants to make an argument that they are, I'm certainly willing to entertain that. But surprisingly, they had only one season above a four SRS, never had above a five. And four seasons between a two and a four. And those, again, are usually levels that are like mid, you know, second round playoff team type levels. They did have five seasons above 600. They had three seasons with 55 plus wins, two finals appearances, which they both won in 94 and 95, one additional conference finals appearance in 97. That was kind of the last hurrah for the Olajuwon, Barkley, Drexler team. After they'd added Barkley, of course. And then two elite player seasons, both for Olajuwon. So I don't know, what's the biggest surprise for you as far as that goes?
I think the biggest thing is the SRS of not being that high. And I think we sort of knew that one of those teams wasn't a great, you know, the one of the title teams had one of the lowest SRSs ever for a title team, which, you know, I knew, but I thought they had a few more in there. But yeah, they're just not, I don't know. I guess I came in thinking they were going to be my favorites. They won those two titles. You know, they had Olajuwon before that. They were in the Western Conference. I sort of assumed that they were better in the early 90s, and they're, you know, there's no slouches. They're very good. But Yeah, I mean, I'd kind of just like the resumes of a few of the other teams we mentioned, like the Jazz, and I think even, you know, the Spurs or the Sonics, I think all have better cases, you know, as being a team of the 90s, you know, more through and through, whereas the Rockets, you know, they won an NBA, you know, they won two NBA titles, but other than that, I don't know if there's much there.
Yeah, and they had a rough regular season in the 90, before the 95 title, and then they made the Clyde Drexler trade and started playing better, and then, you know, of course, were the sixth seed, and then ended up upsetting four favored teams, you know, on the road to win that title. One of the more remarkable playoff runs of all time. But yeah, they were always, and we talked about this a little bit in a recent podcast of the greatest starts ever, which has unfortunately been now a little bit outdated because of how great Golden State has started this season. But they were a team that seemed to be larger than the sum of its parts. Even if you look at the rosters of those teams, they weren't necessarily like the most impressive rosters ever. But for whatever reason, they won, and they, especially those 2 years, they obviously benefit from some timing of Jordan having retired and the Bulls not being the juggernaut that they, you know, that they were when he was there. And but still, I mean, it's I mean, their peak season was 93-94, that they had a 4.19 SRS, which is only six champions since the 77 season have had a lower mark, including the 95 Rockets, who won it at 2.32, which I believe is the lowest mark. Mm-hmm. You know, at least in the merger era, there might be the Bullets championship might be slightly lower off the top of my head, but it's definitely on that low range. And, you know, and most of those are like in an era where during the 70s, in an era where there was just kind of weird parity, which has not really been the case, you know, since then for the most part. So the Rockets are kind of an outlier in that way. And, you know, and hey, maybe they just had something in them that was greater than the numbers make them look. But, you know, as far for our purposes, I think I'm knocking them slightly below, you know, definitely the Jazz on mm-hmm. this list so far.
Yep, I agree.
So next, I think we've made like really the cases that are actually fairly strong. I think we've already kind of made those cases. Like, I don't know if anybody else on this list really has a strong case, but these are more just kind of fun to think about fun to sort of talk about. So next is the New York Knicks. They had two seasons above .500 in SRS, five seasons between 2-4, six seasons above .600 winning percentage, four seasons with 55 plus wins, two finals appearances in 94-99, which they lost. Interesting spread apart in the finals appearances, an additional conference finals appearance in 93, and then three elite player seasons all for Ewing, more than Olajuwon, which kind of shocked me. Only having two for Olajuwon elite seasons just was sort of, you know, we've talked about sort of Olajuwon not quite looking as strong as other guys in those advanced stats, you know, compared to some of the other big men, even though obviously compared to almost anybody else, they look really good. But anyway, they basically had two elite seasons in 93-94. Otherwise, had several good teams that weren't likely to win their championship. The finals team in 99 only had a 1.45 SRS. That was a team that improved dramatically later in the season, thanks to health and thanks to some luck and thanks to 99 being a weird season because of the lack.
Right. Yeah. They just don't have a great all around case. Good, decent case, but yeah, I think not as strong as some of those Western Conference teams that we talked about, but not bad.
Yeah. And you brought up something interesting about sort of like who they faced along the way.
Yeah. And in the playoffs, they had a lot of roadblocks. Yeah. They had a lot of roadblocks along the way in terms of just different teams that they just could not get over the hump from. And it's sort of, it's very, you know, I get Knicks fans' plights of the 90s or whatever. You know, lost to the Bulls twice in the early 90s, you know, then the Rockets in the finals, then they lose to the Pacers, the Bulls, then kind of get upset by the Heat in a little bit of a way, lose to the Pacers again, and then lastly the Spurs in the NBA finals. They just couldn't get over the hump of some of those teams, and it's just, it's interesting, especially the Bulls. They couldn't do it, and then once they finally, you know, got kind of away from the Bulls, then it was the Pacers, and then it was the Heat, and then, you know, they just rough little go for the Knicks, but yeah, that's all right.
Other than the Rockets and the Heat, I would imagine that they would not have been favored in any of those of the series.
No, yeah, of course, those early 90s Bulls teams, yeah. No way.
Maybe the Pacers,
yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, maybe the Pacers, those were very even, though. I think that's why that was such a dramatically great, you know, sort of those series, because I think they were very well-balanced teams and really sort of worked well off each other. I think that's what made that such a good rivalry. It was just like, you don't know who's going to win. Like, either team has an easy chance to win that. Yeah. So that's fun.
And speaking of the Pacers, they had one season above 6 SRS, 4 seasons between 3 and 4, 4 seasons above 600 winning percentage, 4 conference finals appearances, 94, 95, 98, 99, which is actually one more than the Knicks had. Of course, the Knicks had 2 finals appearances and the Pacers did not, but that was kind of interesting. And they had 7 elite player seasons, all by Reggie Miller. So that also stood out to me a little bit as well. The Pacers they were upset at least once by the Hawks. Other than that, I'm not sure that they really ever lost. Yeah, other than, again, maybe the Knicks, depending on the season. Yeah. I don't think they ever really like lost to a team that.
Yeah, I don't think there was ever a year that was like
than, or better than. So
yeah, I don't think there was ever a year that was like, oh my god, this Pacers team is ready to go, and I cannot believe they lost to X or whatever.
Sure, sure. And then next we have the Phoenix Suns. They had 4 seasons above 5 SRS, 4 between 3 and 5, which is actually a fairly high number. A lot of West teams did pretty well in these numbers. Yeah. You know, the West competition was pretty tough during the decade. I guess the Bulls were in some respects lucky to kind of be in the East, because they may have had a tougher road to the playoffs in sometimes if they were playing out in the West. So they beat everybody in the West. So
yeah,
so maybe they've been fine, but had realignment gone differently in the 70s, perhaps they would have had a tougher road to hoe, so to speak. They had 7 seasons above 600, which other than the Jazz might be the most, I think, of any team.
Seven,
the Spurs of 8. So, which is kind of interesting. Because I don't think much, you know, once Barkley left, you don't really think of those teams as being particularly like stout, but they, you know,
no,
they
not
had some
all.
Good seasons in the late 90s too. Yeah. They had a finals appearance in 93, one additional conference finals appearance in 1990 against the Lakers. They had 5 elite player seasons, 3 for Kevin Johnson, 1 for Charles Barkley, and 1 for Jeff Hornacek.
Yeah. Welcome to the party.
Nice. Welcome. Yeah, exactly. Next we have the Portland Trail Blazers, who had 4 seasons above 5 and 5 seasons between 2 and 4 SRS, 4 seasons above 600 winning percentage, 2 finals appearances in 90 and 92, also 2 additional conference finals appearances in 91 and 99. Of course, the early 90s teams and the late 90s teams were very different in personnel, whereas most of these other teams, if not all these other teams, you had at least 1 or 2 signature players mm-hmm. on the early and on the late teams. Elite player seasons, there were 6 total, 3 for Clyde Drexler, 2 for Cherry Porter and 1 for Kenny Anderson, which surprised me. Yeah. I mean, Portland was sort of it was kind of a good fit for him for a few seasons. Yeah. You know, he kind of bounced around after that. But yeah, he had, he did have a strong year or two in Portland. So, they lost to the Spurs that year in 99. I don't particularly remember that series being anything, standout. I mean, they didn't really get back to a point where you thought they could make a finals until, you know, the next year when they got Pippen and they almost beat the Lakers in that conference finals before their huge collapse.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then the Los Angeles Lakers, they had 3 seasons above 6 SRS, 3 seasons between 2.5 and 4.5. I had to narrow that one, be a little specific about that one. They had 6 seasons above 600 winning percentage, 1 finals appearance, which they lost in 91, and an additional conference finals appearance in 98, and 2 elite player seasons, both for Magic Johnson. Surprisingly, Shaq didn't.
Yeah, surprised Shaq didn't make those.
It must have been
early Shaq.
It must have been he didn't play enough games, because otherwise mm-hmm. that wouldn't make a lot of sense, because obviously he was pretty great. And then 2 more, the Orlando Magic, They had a 2 seasons above a 5 SRS, 2 seasons between 3 and 4, 4 seasons above 600 winning percentage, 1 finals appearance, and then an additional conference finals appearance in 96, where they lost to the Bulls after having beaten the Bulls in a 95 in the playoffs. Of course, we don't remember that. they had 3 elite player seasons, 2 for Shaq and 1 for Penny Hardaway.
Yep, that seems fair.
Yeah, and yeah, I mean, we talked about them a little bit before, but they, if they had kept Shaq and Penny together, a lot, I mean, people just, like, they seemed like they were going to be, like, this dynasty. You know, people kind of like how
talked
about the Thunder a few years ago, and, you know, that hasn't quite worked out like people thought. Shaq leaving, and then, of course, Penny getting hurt, you know, the 2 major factors in that. And then next we have the Detroit Pistons, who are kind of a weird choice here because really – their best seasons were, you know, they were kind of done by 91, 92, but they did have some strong regular seasons in the late 90s that, but were not, you know, obviously didn't have a
playoff time. Didn't really do anything. But,
yes, they had 2 seasons above 5, 4 seasons between 2 and 4 SRS, 3 seasons above 600 winning percentage, won the 1990 NBA Finals, made the conference finals in 91. That's the infamous year where they were swept by the Bulls, and then they walked off the court before the time went off the clock. And then 2 elite player seasons, 1 for Dennis Rodman and 1 for Dennis Rodman. Yes. So
no Isaiah. Yeah. That's
yeah. No Isaiah. Yeah.
Well, no Isaiah. No Dumars.
Isaiah ate by then. Dumars never really had, like, I mean, he was like a steady, really good for a long time, but he was never really like had like elite years, I don't think.
Yeah.
At least not production wise. You know, you could argue, you know, defense and other intangibles, maybe he did reach that level, but as far as, you know, actual, you know, what the numbers tell us, not so much. So that's about it. I did look, I'll go through these very, very briefly. These were like way, way, way like borderline, but the Cavs had 2 seasons above a 5 SRS, 4 seasons between 2 and 4, 2 seasons above a 600 winning percentage. They had a conference finals in 92. What I was surprised is they had 4 elite player seasons, 2 for Brad Doherty, 1 for Larry Nance, and 1 for Terrell Brandon.
Yeah.
Late in the 90s. So,
that's a hell of a team, right?
Yeah, I mean, they were a very good team for a few years in the early 90s. I mean, they really did give the Bulls some, well, I mean, I guess reasonably some trouble. I mean, if the Bulls hadn't have been there, they definitely, you know, they could have snuck into a finals for sure.
Oh, certainly.
I mean, they won 57 games in 92, 54 in 93, strong, you know, 5+ SRS both those seasons. So, you know, those Lenny Wilkins years, they had some 89 too, which doesn't fall in our purview, but they also had another strong year that year. So, you know, they were a team that could have had a chance for that. Atlanta Hawks, they had 2 seasons above 4.9 SRS, 2 seasons between 2 and 4, 4 seasons above 600, which might be a little bit of a surprise. No conference finals appearances. They did have 3 elite player seasons, 1 for Dominique Wilkins toward the end of his run, 1 for Dikembe Mutombo and 1 for Mookie Blaylock. So some balance there. And those late 90s Hawks teams, I think, are better than people kind of remember them. They, you know, 99 could have been their year if it hadn't been for the Knicks kind of getting hot. 94, they had a strong season as well. Also, the Knicks ended up making the conference finals there. I think they actually lost to somebody else in that year. So, Miami Heat as well. They had 3 seasons above a 5 SRS, and 3 seasons above 600 winning percentage, 1 conference final appearance in 97, and then 2 elite player seasons, both by Tim Hardaway, which I you kind of forget how good Tim Hardaway was for the Miami Heat. I mean, that was kind of like he had a pretty serious injury that was after that injury, but yet he was able to kind of, I sort of forget sometimes how good he was actually.
Yeah. I kind of think of Mourning as the guy, but yeah, no, it's, Hardaway had some great years.
Yeah, absolutely.
Great career. Yeah, really great career all around.
Absolutely. And then one last one, Boston Celtics, 1 season above 5 SRS, 2 seasons between 3 and 4, 3 seasons above 600, no conference finals appearance, 1 elite player season. This was all at the beginning of the decade. They did not have anything at
the... No, the Dana Barros-led Boston Celtics, unfortunately, did not. Right.
So, yeah,
I mean, not too much
they had one kind of good year after Bird retired, but then it was completely done after that. So, that's about it. Wait,
Yeah.
Or more. The Chicago Bulls without Michael Jordan.
What are you doing?
If you even if you look at them in 1994, they finished 55-27, although they only had a 2.87 SRS. So not a strong season that manner. But in 95, they actually were 47-35 with a 4.32 SRS. And I think you could construct a scenario in which the Bulls reconstitute themselves around Scottie Pippen, who had 5 elite seasons in the 90s. Granted, many of those with Jordan. Horace Grant, who had 1. Tony Kukoc, who had 10-plus win share seasons in both his second and third years, could still win a championship or certainly make a finals if everything broke right, even without Michael Jordan.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that was Pippen sort of ascending to the level that a lot of people thought he, you know, he had the potential to be. And yeah, I think, you know, judging if all the egos could kind of work out, maybe. But yeah, it's there's a reasonable case there. I mean, a 55 win team without Jordan is impressive. That's it's there. I mean, yeah, it's a fun team to look at. I think people forget that team did okay without Michael.
Yeah,
Jordan,
exactly.
Of course.
Yeah. So,
you know, weren't a title team, but we're, you know, a reputable team,
right?
by their standards.
In the right season, I think they came pretty close in 94. I mean, they lost to the Knicks, who made the finals that year in a very tight seven game series.
So, yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, they were, you know, seconds away or just a few points away from winning that, which is incredible.
Right. Exactly. So I do think that they definitely could have made it that year, and they definitely could have had a chance even if Jordan hadn't have come back. And obviously with Jordan, they were, you know, one of the most incredible
instantly
teams.
Become a title.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. So yeah. Anything else, Rich?
That is all, I think.
All right.
Oh, who are you selecting? Who's your team?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Gun to your head, sir. Who are you picking? Well,
please don't put a gun to my head.
Yeah, I'm sorry. No,
But I'm going to go with Utah Jazz.
Damn. That's the first time I think I've ever sneezed on the air. I was going to go with the Jazz too, but now I got to pick another, right?
Just to be dissenting. You don't have to. I mean,
I was going
to
pick the Jazz too. I thought that was going to be my surprise. But yeah, I think the Jazz have a really, really good case there. I think number two would probably be the Spurs. I think that they have another really good case, with the Sonics probably third. But yeah, I think the Jazz are really. I forget about those Western Conference Finals appearances. You know, mentioned the 92 and the 94, you know, these odd years that they're there. I forget about those. So I think they're my number two.
Yeah, I'd still put the Rockets in the top three. But, you know, I'm not sure. Yeah, I guess I would wonder kind of where the Sonics and the Spurs would land. I feel like the Sonics were a stronger regular season team, and I don't discount that, even with playoff disappointments. I mean, I think, you know, being incredible over a regular season, that is a impressive accomplishment that I think we sometimes, sure, like, we sometimes poo-poo it when there isn't the type of playoff success, but I still think that, you know, that's a larger sample. I think there's, you know, I still think we should celebrate that when that happens. So, yeah, it's tough for me to say exactly, but yeah, I would go with Utah at number one.
I think so. Cool. We've agreed.
Awesome.
It is official. It is official. Utah, number two team in the 90s.
All right.
The end.
Well, there you go. All right. I'm sure they will. They will accept. We'll have to make a trophy for them.
We'll bring back
number two team of the I'm sure they'll, you know, they'll
give it to Derek Favors.
They'll hang that up in Energy Solutions Arena, and right. And everyone will be very excited about that. Maybe a banner. Maybe we can make a banner for them. Yeah.
Trey Lyles can come out.
Yeah, I'm sure. What is Trey Lyles doing?
When was Trey Lyles born, by the way? I think he was born like halfway through that.
Probably, yeah. I mean, he's probably like,
yeah,
probably
what
like 20,
Trey
maybe.
Born?
So
1995.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Yeah, so
not even alive for half of the years that we're going to give them the award for. So there's a player in
we'll
the
video. We'll have to have him listen to the podcast before so we can understand what important it was. So
he's got time.
All right, Rich. Well, have a happy new year.
You too.
I will. Yes. And we're gonna, you know, we're gonna forage through the new year and have more exciting podcasts for our listeners. Thanks, everyone, for checking us out. Everyone, have a happy new year. You can find us at harborparoxysm.com. We are part of the HPB network of podcasts, which you can find that feed on iTunes, or you can find our own Over and Back feed on iTunes. Please leave us a rating and review. That helps other people find us and check us out. You can go to overandbacknba.com where there are discussions about history topics. It's our message board where people can go and just talk about what they want as far as classic basketball goes. And we're on Twitter and Facebook at overandbacknba. All right. Thanks a lot for listening, and we'll be back again soon.